Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. This is part two of the interview with Allison Cruz, who was one of the top UFO researchers in the Northeast United States, consistently bringing high-quality video evidence of UFO activity taking place near her home. That area is close to the Laurel Highland Ridgeline, a heavily wooded, tick-infested area characterized by rolling hills with deep valleys. Below the ground, however, are tunnels and hollowed-out spaces from coal mining. Allison began to chronicle the patterns and behavior of the UFO activity and then post it on her YouTube account. Her popularity soared, and with it, harassment and intimidation by hackers and a former Homeland Security agent. In the first part of the interview, we talked about the cloaking ability, as Allison observed. She detailed how there seems to be a bubble around the craft that could be projecting the shape of a domestic aircraft, such as a plane or a helicopter, complete with a projected sound. Adaptive camouflage techniques are not only built-in survival mechanisms displayed in the animal kingdom by insects, reptiles, and cephalopods, to name a few, but the technique is copied and mechanized by high-end contractors working with the military, as described in the book Camellia, A Strange But True Story of Invisible Spies, Heroin Addiction, and Homeland Security by Robert Guffey. I'm not saying that Allison's sightings are military craft. I'm saying that the adaptive camouflage techniques could naturally be deployed by an invasive species trying to keep a low profile. However, as Allison points out, imperfections were detectable when a conversion to domestic aircraft took place. In the first part of the interview, we talked about a sphere descending toward Tower 2 of the World Trade Center on September 11, 2001. The event was caught on live television that day, but that camera shot was quickly switched to another angle of the towers. A very interesting analysis of this sphere can be found online in a video titled 9/11 Conspiracy, The Ball Next to Tower 2. Past guest Andrew Johnson is in the video as well. Although they're analyzing lower quality VCR footage, this is a great example of an honest open discussion of an anomalous observation, and then they share this information. Allison suggested there could be an important connection with the 9/11 sphere and the behavior of the sphere-type bubble craft that projects an image of a domestic aircraft that she observed. What if, she says, there are alien craft using cloaking technology that she's seeing above the hills near her house? If cloaking technology was used to project the image of passenger jets slamming into the two towers, imagine the implications. Very few want to think about it. However, the live television artifacts that seem to reveal the editing imperfections on the fly implies a complicit cover-up within the TV networks. I know it's not a shocking revelation in 2017, but so quickly we forget, as many are lulled into a dream state by the very same networks. Okay, there's that possibility, but Allison suggested that what if the attacks on September 11, 2001 were alien in nature that were covered up by humans? Taking it a step further, this gets into William Bromley's book titled Gods of Eden. William Bromley initially wanted to write and research about the history of war, but he started finding ancient letters and notes, some dating back to the 1600s, describing lights and objects flying in the sky that synced up with violent events and horrible plagues. In the description of this book, it reads, "Bromley presents disturbing evidence of an alien presence on Earth. Extraterrestrial visitors who have conspired to dominate humankind through violence and chaos since the beginning of time. A conspiracy which continues to this very day." Okay, that was from a description of his book, but I wouldn't call them extraterrestrial just yet because that's not really known. I believe that's a common mistake made time and again. It suggests that the origin of these beings are known, and in my opinion, it is not. Before we get into the second part of the interview, I wanted to review our conversation on ways to identify types of fuel that could be powering the craft. Let's have a listen.
In fact, when they started popping out of the woods and doing that mini sun glowing thing, and that's a common thing too, when they transform or expand size. They look like a mini sun, pulsating and spitting and stuff, you know. And then they shrink down, and then you see a craft. So something goes on during that. And I was trying to get spectra of the light to analyze what fuels is in it. You know, just like Hestelins, they found that scandium was one of the fuels making their light, that amberish color light that's a signature of them.
All right, Allison, let me back up. So you used a spectrometer?
I had a diffraction grating lens, you know, just a little cheap thing. You know, I'd wish I had the $20,000 spectrometer that Hariba has, and they provide them to NASA. And there was a scientist guy who was actually a debunker, and he, when he saw my stuff, he's like, yeah, I think you got something there. And I said, well, can you get me a trial to one of these real spectrometers? And he was actually working on that when his cancer got him, and he died on me. Yeah.
He's
the only person that with a scientific background like that that's offered any type of help like that besides the people in Hestelin, which they're kind of limited. Like, they're not allowed to get Generation 3 and above night vision over there because, you know, federal law. The people I went with from Canada, they had to get special permission just to go there and then come back from Canada. But you're not allowed to leave anything there, you know.
I want to get to the Hestelin lights trip that you went on to, but I want to also stay on the spectrometer and the work that you did to determine maybe what kind of fuel these craft are using or being powered from. Why was that of interest to you?
Well, it has to be in a super advanced technology. And, you know, you could film lights in the sky for the rest of your life, and what good is that going to do you? I want to know how they operate and how they can be, you know, silent and expand sizes, and what do they need? You know, the pacing over, I was trying to figure out what technology are they using that they would need to be near these mines or pace back and forth several times. What is going on during that? Because that always happened before they'd flare up and turn into crafts or projected craft or whatever. This expanding size thing from the smaller bubble-like spheres, I think, required some other fuel. And that pacing and that low sphere thing he's whizzing around must be gathering something they need to transform or whatever it is they're doing. I don't know. But it was bothering me not knowing. So I kept trying to figure out, you know, it was fission, fusion, you know, nuclear power interactions. Some people have reported high radiation readings after some have been near or sitting on the ground. So obviously that would require, you know, nuclear fission, right?
A cold fusion, a room temperature fusion, which I now understand does emit a certain amount of radiation, but nothing like the hot fusion. So potentially there's a nuclear reaction going on at around room temperature. It's possible. Were some of the people at the Hestelin Light site able to corroborate some of your findings with your diffraction lens?
Yeah, in fact, well, on mine, the scientist, the guy who died of his cancer, he said that it looked like yttrium could be a possible element. Now, I didn't know anything about, you know, calibrating, you know, against known fuel sources with that same lens. You're supposed to do it like right before or after you capture something. And I didn't know that at the time. And I actually got the glass lens that Erling Strand of Hestelin, the same brand that he used on his famous spectra that he got of the Hestelin lights in 1984-ish, I believe. They found, like I said, scandium as one of the elements. Now, theirs was a timed exposure. Older camera, you have to do timed exposure to pick up lights, you know. So I believe, because when I would see them with, you know, binoculars, I use good binoculars. I couldn't film through them, nor, you know, I had a spotting scope, but that takes forever to find something moving in the sky and try to zoom in on it while it's moving. It was too frustrating. I missed so many shots. But to see them, what they're doing when they flare up, it looks like tiny little colors, like a sparkler, when you look at a sparkler, all the little spitty colors that come out of them, it was similar to that. And I thought, well, maybe each color represents a different fuel interaction. Mm. So we got to try to figure out which other fuels are interacting with this fission fusion process that's happening. Not sure what's going on there. But when they're in this bubble thing, they always seem to have like a neon green glow around them. And maybe that's reacting with our atmosphere, the anti-gravity.
Okay, that was a quick review from the first part of the interview discussing the effort to find the elements that might be fueling the UFO craft by using a spectrometer. We now go to the second part of the interview with Allison Cruz.
I'll never forget that night. I'll never forget that night, November, Friday the 13th, November 2009. Just the sky was swarming with craft. Swarming. Like, oh, we're here and we like your neighborhood and we're going to live here now. That bad. I was like, what are we going to do? I was in the middle of a major remodel on my house and I abandoned it after that. I figure I need my the money to move to some place that they're not, because I didn't think my house would be worth anything. That's how bad it was.
And now it's stopped. Can you talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, they got spottier after November 2012. It started getting spread out and spotty and not that many crafts. And I thought, well, they must be going somewhere else. Whatever they came to observe, or maybe were they here to judge us as a community? We're kind of like a nice little bedroom community that's family-oriented. There's a lot of churches. There's even a Hindu church, or whatever you call them, temple. I think two of them, actually. There's probably 25 churches, you know, not too far from me. Did they come to judge everybody? Is that what the spheres? They would stop over people's houses when people were sleeping at like 3 to 5 a.m. in the morning. Between 2:30 and 5 was average. And these spheres, I mean, lit ones with a larger craft above it would, it's like they were towing a smaller sphere, and it would pause over houses. Now, you know, the dusk to midnight flap, that would be ones that were staying over woods mostly, or hanging next to transmission towers. They would hover next to those in cell towers and pace over these woods. But in the a.m. hour, they were going over houses. I didn't advertise that. I had some video that was on that same drive that fell on the floor, of course, but I didn't post it because I didn't want my property value to drop. Can you imagine? Having everybody flee the neighborhood and your house not being worth anything. So I didn't do that. I didn't post that. But were they judging people by their dreams? Have you had any dreams where it felt like you were tested? I did have one once. It really stuck out to see if I was honest, you know. Dream was, like I was outside of a convenience store. And, you know, the ice chests where you get your ice outside. And, you know, they're usually left unlocked. Well, I went to buy some ice. And when I lifted up a bag, there was money underneath. Like somebody hid it there. And it was almost out of ice. And I thought, that's not right. Who would hide money in an ice thing, you know? Unless they did it, you know, illegally or something. So I went behind, like, you know, trees or something and just waited to see who came to fetch this money. And this guy showed up, and I guess he was a drug dealer, and the cops came and arrested him because I reported that the money was there. But, you know, as an alternative, if I was a different type of person, I could have stolen that money and, you know, taken off with it. And nothing, you know, good come from that. But that to me seemed like it was a test. And it happened around the same time we were getting a lot of the visitations. I don't normally remember a lot of dreams, but that one I remember. And to me, it felt like I was being tested for honesty.
That's weird to me that the test would be conducted in a dream. It doesn't make sense, because how would that be an accurate measurement of your honesty? You're not conscious.
Well, I think you do more things that you really are like. You could pretend to be whoever you want people to think you are. And there are a lot of liars out there that got people convinced that they're decent people. and there's snakes in the grass, you know. But when you're dreaming, you're more likely, I think, to be the person you really are. I bet the people that are snakes in the grass act like that in their dreams. Or murder people, kill people, whatever, without a conscience. So.
Okay, so you think there was some kind of evaluation being conducted?
Yeah, it felt like that. And I've had other ones where, you know, I had the ability to fly. I could, you know, try real hard and I could levitate and fly through the sky. And every time that I had the ability to do that, somebody would need help. And I couldn't enjoy flying around anymore. I had to go help somebody. And I was like, ah. But then I felt, oh, I have to help them. And, you know, hanging off a bridge or something, I had to go grab them and bring them back down to the ground. Is that another test? I think it's possible. I mean, why would something like that, you know, pop up in your dream? It's pretty bizarre.
And remember it, right. Yeah, it is kind of unusual. I usually don't attribute dreams like that as a test or related to the activity, the UFO activity.
Well, I didn't. But seeing them, it was only because I saw them skimming over houses when people were sleeping that made me wonder that. I mean, I've had other dreams. When I used to live in Florida, I had disaster dreams. They were always kind of symbolic. Couldn't do anything about preventing them. Natural disasters, a lot of hurricanes and earthquakes, things like that. Even a plane that the ceiling ripped off of the plane in midair, and I'm standing like on a floating mat in the ocean, and I see oxygen masks float down like umbrellas, you know, like little mini parachutes. And, you know, 3 days later, there was a plane coming back from Hawaii or somewhere, and the roof ripped off, and that's what was in it, was the oxygen mask. So it was like a premonition dream, but I couldn't do anything about it, so why get shown that? But to be able to see something that happens later on, days before it happens, I mean, obviously everything's already written somewhere or planned out, like a movie script. There's designs made. So we're just here to experience them and get judged on it, or I don't know, but it's a challenge. It's a challenge to figure out what's going on, what we're expected to do, what is expected to be our responses, and maybe we're judged on them.
Well,
maybe this is a prison for a bad seed from the, you know, universe.
I've definitely heard that one before, that we're here in a prison. And what I find interesting about your research is you were able to detect the adaptive camouflage methods of some of these craft and their ability to cloak and mimic domestic aircraft to blend in. And even though they were able to do that, they still didn't really blend in because of they were out of place.
They've even done what looked like, or people could, you know, dismiss as a balloon, a weather balloon. But weather balloons don't shine like a star, expand sizes, you know, and then explode out more little spheres that float around in the sky. And not only me, but several people around here. In fact, I only discovered that they were doing that over the same woods these fireballs would be seen. By a local resident that lives about 5 miles away. And he says, you know, these things are happening. I'm seeing them laying on my porch with polarized sunglasses on. I see what looks like an early star, but then it explodes. I'm like, really? Where? And he's like, yeah, it's over, you know, let me look on a map. Hey, you know, it's over those woods you're seeing these fireballs coming out of. So I'm like, you're kidding me, right? And we even went to some park that's in between and got to see one, and there, I don't know, there was like 20 people with me, and we filmed it, and it did. It looked like a weather balloon exploded, and something drops off, but then these glowing balls float out and shine like a little bit, and then they go invisible. And I said, well, maybe that's what I'm seeing with the infrared surveillance camera dropping down like water drops or something. And then, you know, when I started paying attention to those and playing back the DVDs, you know, which were recorded in low res, so I can't transfer them to digital. you know, it's just too faint and, you know, wouldn't be convincing. Mm-hmm. I don't need the harassment. But these things that would drop down like a raindrop, you know, they would start like zipping around, and then when they'd hop over to the tree line, that's where a glowing plasma-like thing would be seen later. So like I said, I got hours and hours. I was watching these all day, fast-forwarding through six-hour DVD recordings on a big screen and saying, what is all this stuff? And then, you know, I could dismiss it as bugs, you know, early on. But like I said, after it was below freezing, you could eliminate bugs and bats and stuff. So it took a lot of time to figure it out, what I have figured out. A lot of time.
Let's shift over to your traveling to Norway and tell listeners how that happened, how you ended up getting there, and what you did there in Norway and experiencing the Hestilen Lights.
Well, I had been, I had the honor of chatting with Erling Strand. He's a professor at Østfold University. Southeast of Oslo, Norway. And he was one of the major scientific people who has been doing it right, in my opinion, out of the Hestilen, which is northern area, mostly farmland in Norway, since the 80s, when the local residents there, I guess, must have contacted him. I don't remember the details. But they contacted him because they were seeing spears, lit spears and cigar crafts and otherwise hanging out and coming close to people's houses in their valley. They never mentioned cattle mutilations there, which I find unusual because a lot of the areas with this same phenomenon has had animal mutilations, cows and otherwise. So he was one of the first people that actually documented them, and he got a diffraction grating showing the spectra. And they found scandium as one of the elements in it. Now, like I said, it blends together when you do a timed exposure. So the multiple elements, you know, it's going to combine in the spectra, I think. So, but they did get scandium, and that's a, you know, radioactive type of element close to yttrium, which the guy found in mine. And like I said, that's where I wondered whether radon gas, high uranium deposits in the ground, like Missouri has, and they have a big flap. It's been going on for decades, too. So the guy from Toronto, Rob Freeman, he had seen something. I guess there was a famous sighting in the late 60s up around Toronto, Canada. You know, it really, he's been interested, obviously, since that time. And he said, you know, I'd like to document these things. And, you know, he was retired and has the ability to do it. And he said, you know, who do you think has the best evidence? And I said, Erling Strand, the Hestilen phenomenon. They are doing it right. They're doing it scientifically. And, you know, there's no ridicule and no guessing, you know. So he says, well, they're having a science camp. Let's go there. And I said, sure, I'll go. So he took me with him and his couple film crew people, and we went out and did the camp in September last year. And people had already been there. By the time we got there, they had already seen at least 10 objects. And they had tents set up, I think 3 tents, loaded with equipment. There was probably 6 to 8 computers hooked at various programs, spectrometers, I think radiation. I don't remember all the details, but they had spectra gathered, I think, on each camera, which was north, south, east, west, and one overhead in a, like a 360 sky dome type. The results of this, what they gathered, we're waiting still for the white papers to come out. White papers that scientific analyzation with charts and graphs, and you know, they'll be dissecting it, everything that they captured. In fact, I know that the night that I was there, right behind our tent, one of the orange glowing ambers showed up, and they played it back the next day. They're like, you know, while you were standing there, you guys were outside, and you were in front, and the tent was blocking it, and they were behind it. I saw a real fast flashing one go right behind this Rob Freeman guy, and as he was telling me a story about the guy in Australia, who Damien Knotts. He's a repeat sighting person in Australia, and he went to see him even, and something showed up when he was talking about this guy's sightings. And it went right behind him. He didn't get to see it, but he did get to see some. This March, he went back in the snow, braving the snow, riding snowmobiles up to the top of these mountains. And they're moss covered. It's really pretty, and it's like real thick moss, like a carpet sponge. But down in the valleys, there's old iron ore mines that, you know, Viking types used to make their weapons out of. And that's where a lot of the sightings were, down below there. And it had this hum. It was so loud there, instead of just hearing it in my right ear, which I typically do, it was like in the middle of my head loud. So whatever that is, it's loud there. I'd like to figure out what that's attached to, or what's making that sound. That there's real good recordings out. I'll have to send you a link to one. It's real good, so you can include it.
Allison, you sent me a link of one of the hums. Let's see if it translates over the air. Let's have a listen to this. Just a sample of what that hum sounds like that people are recording, and specifically at areas that UFOs are often seen. Now, getting back to your trip in Norway, what time of year did you go?
It was September of last year.
Did you bring equipment with you to also document?
I had my video camera. You have to have special permission from the U.S. government to take anything Generation 3 and above out of the country. I didn't have time to apply to the State Department and get the written blah, blah, blah. But the guy from Canada who took me, he already got his written permission from Canada. He bought the same Generation 3 equipment, different manufacturer. So there was two Generation 3 night vision scopes that went there, plus our other film equipment.
And were you able to document any of the activity with your own equipment?
It was too fast. What I saw was fast. I, you know, was talking to somebody, and I didn't have a camera running. And it's good that they have when their actual footage from the university and the science camp comes out, it should be mind blowing, because they had 360 cameras doing time shots on film cameras that were open, for 6 minutes. Time shots, I think, and it would record to software, and has diffraction gratings on, I think, each of them, or maybe just the 360 one, I'm not sure. So they're not missing anything, so I didn't feel so bad, because they actually caught them. They caught a big glowing amber, the big ones like used to be by my house over the coal mines, on the next hill over from the lower camp we were at the first night. And I kept staring at that one hill. It was cold, so I sat in the rental car, this rental Volvo, and I kept staring at this hill, and it was pretty far to walk, and the spongy, moss-covered ground where I didn't know where I was going, I was really tempted to walk and look over this other hill, and found out the next day, that there was a glowing amber that lasted a long time, and they got it on film. So I don't know. You get a weird feeling that they're around or they're not around. I used to feel that, like, a real strong need to look out the window, and there would be one out there. And I even tested it against me not feeling like I needed to look out the window or check with this surveillance footage, the six-hour thing. And when I played that back, there was none on those nights. I didn't feel compelled. So there got to be something to them being felt, or they want you to see them, or something similar to that. It all sounds bizarre until it happens to you. You know, it sounds insane. If somebody's never seen this, they're going to say, yeah, what drug she on? She's smoking too much herb. I have a excavation company, and, you know, you get drug tested, you know, if anything happens. So I haven't touched anything for 20 years.
Allison, you have an excavation company, and you have major clients and big contracts, and you're dealing with a lot of important people, and a lot of money is exchanging hands. You have a lot of responsibility. Do you feel that it's fortunate that the UFO activity has declined in your area so you can get your life back?
Absolutely. Yeah, it was pretty all-consuming for at least 3 years. But it was daytime and nighttime. Daytime, you know, seeing the sphere was probably 3 foot in diameter and shining super bright and going forward, backwards, daytime. Daytime V-shaped thing that had to be 6 to 9 foot long, tumbling, and went upwind. So it wasn't a kite or a balloon of some weird large thing that somebody would release over woods, you know? Weird things. A lot of things that happen at daytime. I'm out in my garden. I look up, there's a big ball, just a white ball over me. I'm sailing on my sailboat down on my other house out there, and there's a white sphere just going across the river. Another cigar thing went one way, stopped and reversed and came back while I'm sailing. No camera, obviously. It's like they do it on purpose. They know you don't have a camera or something.
Right.
It's really frustrating, but it's like, here we are, and you can't film us, haha. And a lot of other people are having the same thing happen. It has even crossed my mind, and I know it sounds even more bizarre, maybe each person has something tailored to them, and the rest of what you're seeing, maybe the whole thing is a hologram for each person, and each person's are different. Maybe you're not really there. Maybe the listeners aren't really there, or what they're hearing is only made for them to hear. You know, it's that bizarre.
You mean that our experiences are so subjective on one end, and then on another end, they're subjective and manipulated, tailored to the individual.
Yeah. And the only thing that messes that up is there's just the population is just too large. It just seems like that would be too hard to handle, even from a supercomputer controller kind of way. You know, if you look at the creatures in the ocean, you know, they can change their appearance to match rocks to hide, you know, those little squid things. Things like that. Who engineered that? They didn't do it themselves. I think it's ridiculous for anybody to think that just millions of years could make you do that, because I would be able to do it right now because I want to. You know what I mean? It's not logical. Some things aren't logical in the explanations.
Huh.
Cuttlefish is one of them.
I'm not sure if I agree with you on that one. Could it be from millions of years of evolution? They're an old category of sea creature. Is it adaptive camouflage? Does it help them avoid being eaten by a certain predator? I do know that there are some squid that mimic their predator's predator.
Mm-hmm.
It gets that complicated. It seems to be a survival mechanism that is built in. Now, could it be an advanced version of this? Would almost take over a human mind and allow its the person's perceptions to be altered?
Yeah, I think so. Especially when you see a lot of people that are, I mean, there's the flat earthers. I mean, they're really going crazy lately. They have their own groups and everything, and they think the whole round planet thing is all fake. I mean, that sounds so bizarre. When they have cameras out in space looking at the planet and it's round. No, it's just the lenses. It's making a fake thing. It's really flat. I mean, I don't know. If things are tailored to a bunch of different people to be different, or, you know, they throw that at us to entertain our minds. I don't know.
That's an interesting example of a phenomena occurring on a mass level where a belief system has reoccurred from, I guess, the 1600s, the 1500s. And Peter Shampoo, who is a frequent guest on the show, who studies ley lines and sacred geometry, had mentioned that the Earth is not flat based on the sacred geometry that is informed by water, because water is a universal element. He said that water tends to shape the geometry and inform the geometry. And, of course, you look at the moon, you look at the planets out there, even with a telescope or a camera, you can determine the sphere of a planet, Jupiter or Saturn. And then Dr. Judy Wood, who is also a frequent guest, she said another test to do is if you're on one of the big Great Lakes you're in the middle of it, you won't see the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And you know it's a lake and until you get close to the shore. And so that implies a curvature.
Right. Yeah, logic. Logic, you know, sticks its head up and it should work, but it's not working on a lot of people. It makes me wonder, are they reincarnated from 1600 flat earthers and they're born again with the same mindset they left the planet in, you know, or left that lifetime with?
Never thought about that. That's a really good analysis. And also, my theory was that it's a psychological operation.
Yeah, might be. I mean, there was just a show on one of the learning channels. Kids that were born remembering their past life, remembered the names and everything, and they actually found the families that they used to be in that past life, and they verified that that kid knew everything. And then, you know, as you got older, you forgot it, you know, forgot that lifetime. Now, how can that happen, you know, unless we're reconstituted, for lack of a better term? Why do we have to keep going through that over and over and over again? The Mormons, I think it is, they think that their religious belief is that we keep coming back till we're perfected, and then we're allowed to move on to another planet. I had one Mormon guy tell me that like 20 years ago. And that sounded really weird, you know, but with reincarnation happening, you know, maybe that's where they came up with that. You have to look into that one, huh?
Now, getting back to your experiences out where you live, I was curious if there were any sightings of cryptids in and around your area during the time when the UFO activity was really frequent.
I don't know about during. I'd have to look at the dates, but there's a guy who has been into the Bigfoot thing and any other weird, quote-unquote, cryptids, like you call them, like a Mothman thing, giant bird kind of things. Weird stuff, you know? And I didn't find out. Stan Gordon is his name, and he's a regular speaker at, like, MUFON conventions and stuff. And the Butler Paranormal Conference, he's always there almost every year. And they do the famous Kecksburg UFO crash. They have like a anniversary thing they do in Kecksburg, PA, which is the same county that these sightings were happening in. Hmm. But anyway, Bigfoot, last thing I heard about that was somebody in the next town over had glowing eyes looking through their window, which was about 8 foot off the ground. And while they're on the toilet, I think it was. That and these giant bird sightings is around my same county. And middle of Pennsylvania, there had been a UFO sighting with Bigfoot and glowing spheres with them, and they shot at them. I forget which county it was in. In the middle of the state, more, you know, where it's more wooded. And then everything disappeared or something similar. You have to look up that one. You might want to hear about that case from him directly. I'm not an expert on that. And it was weird enough what I was experiencing. I didn't need to add Bigfoot hanging around staring in my windows as a possibility. It was a little overwhelming just having these unknown things that have the ability to expand and change shape and do whatever they feel like, you know, hanging around your house. Wasn't very comforting, let's put it that way. Very stressed out at the time. I wasn't feeling too safe, you know?
Yeah, definitely, I understand. And it was really protecting your children as well. And I ask about the cryptids because they're often seen with UFO activity, from what I understand. And there's something called Dogman. It looks like a werewolf, basically. It can stand on two legs, and it reaches that height of about 8 to 9 feet tall here in the United States. And they're almost everywhere. They're in rural areas and in suburban areas as well. But they do stare through the windows. For some reason, I don't know why, they tend to look through windows, and their eyes glow, and they're the color of amber. Huge shoulders, very muscular. I want to get back to the fake plane issue one more time here and get your take on some of the similarities, possibly, of what Ellen Crystal, who wrote Silent Invasion back in the 80s, experienced and what you experienced.
Well, it was interesting because one of the people who found my videos had told me about her book, and that her and Dr. Bruce Cornett had actually studied the famous Pine Bush, New York, and it was during the Hudson Valley UFO flap around the same time that I guess it was a Jewish cemetery that they would see these spheres that were turning into what looked like airplanes. And they were silent and low-flying and slow. Like the ones I saw, I could run and keep up with them. That's how slow they were moving. When you're flying low and slow and you're small, visually the people on the ground, if you're a little blurry and you're low and slow, you could say, that's really, 40,000 feet. That's why it's moving slow. But when you get a radar report back and there's nothing in the sky, that kind of confirms it, that, or where they go past trees, the trees behind them, like I caught, that was like, I'm not crazy. So what he saw out there with her, and she had more sightings, and he came to check it out because probably her book, I don't recall the details of the events, but it's the same thing. It was the same thing, the spheres, plasma-ish spheres, they start glowing real bright, sparkle, and when they dim down, all of a sudden you see plane lights and they're flashing. And it's the same exact phenomenon. So I have to assume that it's the same group of ET technology. I can't imagine more than one ET group is coming here and copying each other, copying the locations, the behavior, and the plasma flaring up, turning into planes and showing up, looking like a star that explodes and pops out more dripping. A lot of times they're dripping. I think I have a playlist still probably on my YouTube channel of probably, some have been deleted, but there's probably at least 20 I add to this playlist, UFOs mimicking stars and stuff like that. I think it's a playlist name, you have to look. But they'll look like dripping embers, like there's something, in the sky that's bleeding. Some are blinking and popping out, things are dripping down. There was even one filmed off the coast of Brazil doing it with, dozens of things coming out of it. I just think they mix up their behavior more as a confusion kind of thing. That's all I can think that it is try to confuse the human observers so they don't put two and two together. But now with the Internet, it's easier to put two and two together and four and four and eight and eight and prime numbers if you want to go there. People say that they flashed them with lanterns in prime numbers and gotten a response back. So I have to try that if I see them again.
I've wondered if you're still interested in continuing observing and contacting out there in your area.
Well, I haven't seen that much. There was only one or two nights I think I saw some since the end of 2012. And that Rob Freeman that took me to Norway. The reason he did is because he showed up and we were at the usual spot that was high. It had a good 360 view around this golf course. I took my night vision out and I scanned the usual spot they used to be. And I said, I haven't been here for a while, but see that low, what looks like a star over there by that tower? I said, in the night vision, you could only see it in the night vision. I said, no, that could be one. If it moves wrong and not with the rotation of the Earth, or if it starts glowing real bright, then that's definitely one. And they're like, really? And in 15, 20 minutes went by, and I looked again, and it had moved, and it didn't move with the stars. So I said, yep, I think that's one right there. Just keep watching it, and you'll see it illuminate. It did. It started to illuminate. They could see it through their eyes. It was like red-orangey color. And I said, now, if they do the same behavior they used to do, it's going to go to the right. And it did. It started going to the right. It was visible. I said, now, when it gets over so far, it's going to start flaring up. And it did. Right after I said that, it flared up. And I'm like, oh, my God! I said, now it's going to go to the left a little bit. And it did. It started going to the left. I said, now it's going to go over here, and it's going to flare up. And it did. And right after I said it, they're like, oh, my God, it's like it's listening to you and doing what you say, you know. And I said, no, it's just their behavior is so predictable over that area with these mines underneath. So I said, now it's going to go over, and it's going to flare up at least one more time. And if it dims down and takes off fast, it'll flash like a plane. It did it right after I said it. Did it one more time, and they were just screaming. They're looking at it. All three of them were looking at me like, oh, my God, this is real. I said, see, you have to see it with your eyes. It's not something a camera really can capture. Night vision can catch the flaring up, you know, craziness that, you know, planes with voltage regulators, their lights are never going to look like they're going to explode because they have voltage regulators, you know. So they have controlled output. I don't care if it's xenon or halogen bulbs or whatever. It's never going to do that. And it's like they have to do that so many times and maybe gather something, or it just takes them that long to fully morph into a craft. I don't know what's going on in that, but it's a pattern. So like I said, I look for that in reports, the pacing, because the pacing is definitely them. And that's what happened. The guy in Australia, Eugene something, I forget his last name. He's on Facebook in the group too. He found an area over woods where they did exactly the same thing. So, like I said, a lot of people have found me because they've seen the same thing, and that gal you interviewed, she's one of them out of dozens now. It's good to have people that know you're not crazy because they've witnessed it, and they try to debunk their own things. It's good to stay not reading things. Like, I have not even read the entire book, only a synopsis of that Ellen Crystal book.
I would recommend reading her book. She suspects there's a mining operation. She lives in New Jersey, and she moved to California, to Los Angeles. She was a musician, and she had a sighting where she's walking down the sidewalk in Los Angeles, and a craft flies right up to her as she's walking down the sidewalk, and she can see the being inside the craft, and it flies away. And she was traumatized by the experience so much that she moved back to New Jersey. She became obsessed about UFOs. She saw UFO activity here in New Jersey, and then somehow she connected into the Pine Bush area, and then was going out there at night by herself, walking around those farms, and she was able to determine that there were huge ships hovering about 20 feet off the ground, cloaked, and then she was hearing noises and humming underground. Now, Allison, now that things have sort of quieted down in your area, where is your interest going now in terms of studying and researching this phenomena?
Well, I read the reports every day that are reported to, you know, the most popular because they have TV shows, is MUFON.com and Newfork.org is the oldest one, but they just collect reports. Nothing ever happens. I don't think the people involved, as scientific as they are, either don't have the time to travel there to an area that has multiple reports, or they haven't seen enough themselves to be able to recognize that it could be a repeat area. Having lived in a repeat area, I do know what all the signs of them and that different behavior that they do, and there, yes, there can be multiple crafts and you know, whatnot, and the geology they seem to be attracted to. like right now there's a swath in Ohio from Columbus down to a little bit east of Cincinnati. Same type of reports. I think there's even a cattle mutilation there too, which that's why I stopped chasing them in the dark by myself, because I am not sure why they do them, but I think the same group is doing cattle and animal mutilations too. But southern Missouri and a couple other areas in central Missouri who also have a lot of mines, coal mines, high rate on gas, that seems to be a big factor. And but they haven't been very nice to some of the farmers down there in Missouri either, pushing one couple to the ground, taking a Jeep that didn't have a motor running and smashing it into a barn on flat ground, dragging it, you know. But if we can get equipment and actually surround an area, you know, with spectrometers and whatnot, you know, Hess-Dalen style, that is the model. Anybody that claims to be investigating them, they should use Hess-Dalen as a model. The equipment used, tried and true, what's working on that, et cetera. There should be mobile observation stations, you know, in a, say, an RV trailer or something you can even take and go and plop it down in the middle of a hot spot and leave it so that, you know, because I think they detect human activity and they shy away from it. We've had them go around in circles around us when we tried to be in the area that they were hanging out the night before. Well, you know, infrared, they could pick us up a mile away, you know. So they just avoid the area. So if you left a observation station in the middle of an area and then were further away, say 360, three points around it further away, a couple of miles away, and we're watching what the observation station got, for instance, you might have a chance to get more information about what they are and what they're actually doing. Maybe plant some cameras or detection equipment underground. See if that hum sound is louder in the mines. I suspect it probably is.
What?
Scientific study, not just talking about it, not going, wasting your money, going to UFO conferences, hear somebody talk and regurgitate something. You're wasting your money. You could buy your own equipment, buy your own tri-field EMF meter, NEM2 model with the sum setting. You could get your own night vision equipment or at least a better camera, and they should be sharing where a repeat area is so you can go and try to do it yourself.
I know some people claim that the objects are following them and monitoring them, and they'll show up in different places of a location that somebody lives in, and it'll give the impression that they're being followed. What do you think about that?
I think it's possible. I felt certainly monitored in my own house at the time that all this stuff was going on. And to catch them on the camera, you know, that was like proof that they found something interesting about us or our house, whatever. Looking in the windows, the spheres, you know, dropping down from the sky to like to look at the camera and then zipping off like, oh no, I'm on camera. Things like that. I'd have to say that, yeah, there probably is people there. They've chosen, maybe they detected higher brain waves or something interesting about them, and now they're a study subject for a while. Why or what the purpose of that, they'd have to tell us. I doubt they will.
Allison Cruz, it's just been a delight to have you back on the show and speak about a lot of very sensitive information, and I look forward to see the results of the Hess-Dalen Lights white paper studies, and also to hear about more information about spectrograph data and what could be powering some of these crafts, because I think it's useful information. Thank you so much for being on In Other News.
And thank you for having me. Appreciate that.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. If you're around Manhattan, Friday, June 23rd, 2017, I'm going to be presenting some of the UFO footage that I've collected over the years. It's going to be part of the Disclosure Network in New York. And the location is CAP 21 Studios, 18 West 18th Street, between 5th and 6th Avenue. This will be held at 7 p.m. It'll be from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. That's Studio 604 at 7 p.m. sharp. And the price to get in is $10. Thank you.